Continuing with the Makoros from last week, and so please refer to them. Also, I want to remind everyone to sign in if you haven't done so yet. The link is on the page. So last week we saw that the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Pei Ches Amud Beis attributed the proliferation of debate between the Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel to the fact that they weren't Mishamish Kol Tzarchem. They weren't Mishamish Kol Tzarchem. In other words, the implication is that they could have done better, but they didn't. Rambam says it wasn't their fault, necessarily. Not every time will Talmidim be as great as their Rebbe. But it was because they weren't Mishamish Kol Tzarchem. Rambam, though, added, and really the Gemara stated, that this in and of itself was not sufficient to explain the proliferation of Machlokas. This was the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim, Perk Aleph, because if that were the only cause, so still they could have simply gone to Beis Din, gone to Sanhedrin, and voted and come to a conclusion, follow the majority view, as had always been done. And therefore, there must have been some other cause for why there was this proliferation of machlokas. And the Rambam answers that this was because there was a bittel of the Beis Din Hagadol. In other words, there was no method, no mechanism to resolve the questions. So there were really two factors which combined to lead to this tremendous proliferation of machlokas among the Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel, ad kedei kach, that the Gemara says was nasa k'shtei toros. It was mamish like there were two toros. I don't want to say chas v'shalom, two religions. But the point is that there were so many debates that it was like there were two toros. And that's because without a Beis Din Hagadol, there's no way to resolve all the machlokas. Maybe something akin to today, where avadeh, we're one religion, one Torah. But l'maisa, you know, if you're Ashkenazi and you want to know what to do, you go to an Ashkenazi halacha sefer. You're Sephardi, you go to a Sephardi halacha sefer. They're combined in a Shulchan Aruch, but they're still two different things. So that's the way it was, and that's why there was no resolution. Now, this resolution, this idea that the Rambam says that it's because of the Bittel based in Hagadol, raises some questions from a historical perspective. What do I mean to say? So let's just think about what time actually we're talking about. So Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel flourished before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And moreover, Sanhedrin, the high court, continued to function even after the termination of the Beis HaMikdash. We'll see a little bit later that the Sanhedrin went into Galus and it went to 10 different places. It was in Yavne, it was in Sipori, etc. So what does it mean when the Rambam says that there is a bittel of Sanhedrin, Mishibatel Beis Nagadol? So one clue emerges from the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perk Yudalet, Halacha Yudalef. So let's take a look over there. You have in your sheets. Ein danin dine nefashos, ela bifnei habayis. Vehu, sheyia based in Hagadol Sham, belishka shebimikdash, shenemar, bizakin mamre, levilti shamoa ala kohen vegomer. Ume piashmo alamdu, shebisman sheish kohen makriv, agabe amizbeach, yesh dine nefashos. Vehu, sheyia based in Hagadol bimkomo. So the only time that they based in, the only time that any court actually could adjudicate capital punishments is when the Beis Din is in the Lishkas Hagazis, which was part of the Beis HaMikdash complex. Betchila, kshene Beis HaMikdash, hayu Beis Din HaGadol Yoshvin b'Lishkas Hagazis, shahaysa b'Esas Yisrael, v'amakom shayu Yoshvin b'au, chel, haya, she'en yeshiva b'azara, ela l'malchei Beis David. So now the Rambam writes that originally it was in the Beis HaMikdash, and so what exactly does that mean? When the moral character of the Jewish people declined, something happened. There was some type of kilkel. So they were exiled. The high court was exiled from place to place. V'lasara mekomos galo. It was exiled to 10 different places. V'sofan l'Tveria. The last one was Tveria. U'misham lo amad beis nagadol ad ata. And from then till now, there's never been a beis nagadol. Now, again, this one was in Tveria as well after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The Kabbalah he shebit Tveria asidin lachzor tchila umishan ne'atakin l'mikdash. And we have a tradition, and it's very interesting that the Rambam quotes this. Why is that relevant? But he thinks it is. So we have a tradition that the Sanhedrin will reconvene in Tveria, and from there it will go forward to the Beis HaMikdash b'mei Rav Yameinu. So let's just read on a little more. Arbaim shana kodem chorban bayisheni batlu dinei nefashos miYisrael. So for 40 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there were no dinei nefashos. In other words, even though technically speaking, for the last 40 years of bayisheni, they should have been able to be done dinei nefashos, since after all, the Beis HaMikdash was kayim. So they could have technically had the Sanhedrin Hagadol and the Lishkas Hagazis. Nevertheless, it was Batlu Dinei Nefashos Mishral. Afal Pishaya Mikdash Kayim. Mipnei Shigalu HaSanhedrin, because the Sanhedrin went into exile. V'lo Ayusham B'mekoman B'mikdash. They weren't in their proper place. So the Rambam here we see attributes the Sanhedrin leaving the Beis HaMikdash to some sort of religious or moral degradation. And he also notes that this took place 40 years before the Sanhedrin, before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because at that point, the Sanhedrin was already exiled. Now, this idea comes from the Gemara in Shabbos, Teslav and Maralaf, Avodah Zarah, Chesem and Beis, where the Gemara says that the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas Hagazis 40 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash because of some sort of lawlessness at the time. They reasoned that it was adaraba, that it was better to not don dine nefashos because there was nefishi rotzchen, there were so many murderers. So 40 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so when was that with respect to Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel? So the truth is, it's around the same time. Shammai died in the year 30 CE, which was exactly 40 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Hillel died in the year 10 CE, so 60 years before. So perhaps what the Rambam is saying is that these two events basically happened around the same time. Again, what do I mean events? The Rambam told us there are two causes for the Ribui Machlokas. Number one, Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel Shaloshim Shukal Tzarech, and B, the inability to come to resolutions because of the Bittul based in Haggadah. So maybe they happened around at the same time, and that's what caused the Ribui Machlokas b'Yisrael. And that's why, of course, seemingly, you know, when we study Gemara, there's so many machloksin, and there's no, generally speaking, clear-cut resolution. Now, we'll get back to that point, actually, in a couple of minutes. I don't think, though, that this actually answers the question, certainly not fully, because even though the Sanhedrin did leave the Lishkas Hagazis, like we said, it continued to function elsewhere. So the question is, why couldn't they reach halachic resolutions at that point? In other words, why, when they were in Galus in those 10 different places, why couldn't they reach resolutions at this point, right? So that's the Shaila. Why'd they stop? Why did they stop now? And of course, if you said that there was no option, fine. But l'chora, there is an option. Okay. So I'm going to, I don't know the answer to this question, to be honest, but we'll consider some possible mahalchim today. Maybe some of you have something to add, because I'm not sure. But I think fundamentally, you could go in two directions. The first direction would be to say that the halacha doesn't allow the high court to resolve these types of questions once it left Yerushalayim. In other words, just like you couldn't don dine nefashos outside of Yerushalayim, so too you couldn't resolve definitively machlokest. And that's why they stopped, you know, resolving the question such that there's a riboy machlokas. Or alternatively, it was some type of practical consideration or political consideration, other reasons, not a technical reason, not a fundamental reason, but a practical reason. So which one was it? So first glance, I thought it sounds like from the Rambam that it was this technical reason, this halachic reason. The psukim that describe how that the Sanhedrin has the authority to resolve all questions of halacha do refer to the Sanhedrin HaGadol when in Yerushalayim, right? Ki palei davar mimcha l'mishpat, bein dam l'dam, bein din l'din, bein nega l'nega, divrei rivos v'sharechos, you have a machlokes about the halacha, about how to interpret the Torah. V'kam tav alisa makom ha-shev char Hashem elokecha bo, you go to Yerushalayim. Uvasa lakon ha-alim ha-shev yabayim ha-hem, and you follow their ruling, lo sasur, v'asisa kol ha-shev rucha, etc., etc. So maybe the Rambam held that that is dafka in Yerushalayim. The truth is, if we look at both the Rambam and in Chazal, and again, I'm not entirely sure what to do with it, you have a sort of mixed messages about this. The Rambam, talked about this both in Hilchos Mamrim and in Hilchos Sanhedrin. In Hilchos Mamrim, he talked about a bittul Sanhedrin. In Hilchos Sanhedrin, he talked about the galus of Sanhedrin. Does that mean the same thing? And in Chazal, you also have that. The Gemara in Ksubos on Lamed Amar Aleph says, "Miyom Shachar Beis Hamikdash, Afal Pisha Batlo Sanhedrin, Arba Mises Labatlo." Arba Mises Labatlo means that Hashem sort of, you know, kills the murderer in a way that the murderer should be killed. But there it has a lashon of Bittel Sanhedrin, which is like the Rambam's lashon in Hilchos Mamrim. But elsewhere in Chazal, talks all about the galus of Sanhedrin. And that it did continue to function afterwards. There's an interesting medrash that says, "Ma ra'a Yaakov shebirech zvulun v'achar kach yisachar, v'al yisachar gadol mimenu, v'yisachar yirai l'varech tchila, el etzafa v'ra'a shebeis hamikdash she'asid l'chariv, v'asid sanhedrei she'te'aker mishivto shel Yehuda, u'likava b'chalko shel zvulun." So the Sanhedrin would eventually end up in the Chelek of Zvulun, and it talks all about the different places where it went, from Yavne to Usha to Shafaram to Veisharim to Tzipori, Tzipori was in the Chelek of Zvulun, and eventually in Tveria. So what do you have? What do you see? That Sanhedrin did continue to function. So again, what's the pshat? So you could just say that the Gemara says that it refers to Bittel Sanhedrin means Bittel Sanhedrin in its classical place, or Bittel Sanhedrin in terms of the ability to be done dine nefashos. Lemaisa, there's a machlokas achronim about this question, and they debate exactly the status of Sanhedrin post-Yerushalayim, after it went into Galus. But as we'll see, I think that it's pretty clear, though, again, I can't say it's Pasha. There do seem to be Achronim who don't say this way. But it seems to me to be pretty clear that Sanhedrin was able to continue to function in the capacity of resolving halachic debates even after they left the Beis HaMikdash. And the seemingly the most obvious proof for this is because in Yavne, under the leadership of Rav Gamliel, we'll talk about this in a couple of moments, they finally did actually resolve all those machloks in between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and they came to a definitive conclusion, right? The halacha is like Beis Hillel, more or less. So it seems then that there was the ability to resolve halachic questions outside of the Lishkas Hagazis. And not only was there that ability, but they did. That's how they paskin like Beis Hillel. There's a Sifrei that says this explicitly. The Sifrei writes that, let me just read you the Lashon. The Pasuk is Uvasa, the Pasuk's going on the Vasa l'makom ha-shevchar Hashem. So the Sifrei darshins Uvasa l'rabos based in Shebi Avne. Based in Shebi Avne. So it's true, you couldn't dam dine nefashos, but in terms of the role of Sanhedrin as the interpreters of the Torah, that's even based in Shebi Avne. And this is the approach that the Chazon Ish adopts, among others. So if it could be done outside of the Beis HaMikdash, then we have to figure out why didn't they do it? Why not? So one possibility, and why does the Rambam say it's Taloi in Bittul Sanhedrin, right? That's, I guess, the bigger question. If the Rambam himself agrees, and again, there's evidence in the Rambam for this, especially when he talks about Yiftach Bedoro Kishmol Bedoro. So if the Rambam agrees that they could resolve these questions outside, after the Sanhedrin went into Galus, or out after Bittul Sanhedrin, so why does he attribute the Ribui Machlokas to Bittul Sanhedrin, right? That's not a correct attribution, because they could still resolve the Machlokas, and even after there was Bittul Sanhedrin. So it could be that what the Rambam means, as I said, is a little bit more practical. As long as there was a Sanhedrin in the Beis HaMikdash, there was always a place that all the Chachamim could gather, they could debate the possibilities, they could vote, right? Everybody knew where to go. Sort of like the Rambam we saw last week, which describes the whole process. You know, when there was a local debate about how to understand a particular halacha, they would go first to the local court and then they would go to Yerushalayim. There was a place where everybody could go and debate. And finally, there could be a hachra, there could be an amida l'minyan and a hachra, like the psukim really lay out in Dvarim Yud Zayin. Once they left the Beis HaMikdash, at least until Yavne, which was much later, that didn't happen. The Talmidei Chachamim were dispersed. We'll talk about it shortly. They were persecuted. It was a time where there was no way practically to get together, to debate, to vote. So when the Rambam says that Mishabitel Sanhedrin, that's what led to a Ribui Machlokas prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that doesn't mean that technically speaking, it was impossible to resolve Machlokas anymore. But for practical reasons, that wasn't happening. And I think maybe to better appreciate this, what we could do now is go through a history of machlokas from Matan Torah until today. And I think this is my division. You could probably make your own divisions, but I think you could identify six stages in the development of machlokas based off of the way the Rambam sets things up. And this is an important thing to think about. You know, we saw last week when we read the Sefer HaKabbalah of the Ravid. So he writes that, you know, what's the reason why people question the Torah Shebaal Peh, question the Masorah? Because they see so much machlokas, right? And how do you deal? What does all this machlokas tell you about this system and the efficacy of the system and the veracity of Torah and the like? So it's very important to understand the history of machlokas and how it began and why it wasn't resolved or when it wasn't resolved. So we have here six stages. You have this on your source sheets. The first stage is lasted from Moshe Rabbeinu until the Zugos. The truth is, we could have divided that into two stages, but we'll spell that out. And the second stage was the Zugos. Then we have the following, the death of Shammai and Hillel, where we see the Riboy Machlokas. Then we have following the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and what was going on in Yavne to sort of resolve the Machloksin. Then we have post-Yavne, the Tanaim, the Amoraim, and the like. And then we have our current situation, which begins following Chasimas HaShas. So let's go through all these six stages and try to understand what was going on in each one. So starting from the beginning, as long as Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, then any question concerning the interpretation of the Torah could be directly resolved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Imdu ve'ashmel ha'maitzav ha'ashem lochem. That's what Moshe could say and did say when a shaila was proposed to him. Now, following the death of Moshe, the Torah could no longer be decided in heaven. Lo ba'ashamayim hi. Any question that arose would now have to be decided by human understanding of the Torah. Ein navi rishai l'chadesh davar. A navi could be a posek, and many of the great poskim were neviim, but he couldn't poskin using nevuah. So like we read last week, when all these shilas arose following the death of Moshe, so what happened? So they went to Yoshua. Yoshua said, there's nothing I could do, right? Until finally, Asniel ben Kenaz was able to resolve these questions, bepilpulo, meaning using his seichel. So at the time of Moshe's death, what happened? So the written Torah was complete, and that was carefully passed down from generation to generation, and the Torah Shebal Peh was transmitted orally from teacher to student. And the Rambam writes in his Hakdama to the Mishneh Torah who the chief participants are in that transmission. And he lists them. If you take a look over here in the next source, this is from the Hakdama to the Mishneh Torah. He tells you how the oral law was transmitted. Afal pishalo nichtav otar shebal peh, limda Moshe Rabbeinu kulam beveis dino l'shivim zakenim, ve'lazu pinchas v'yoshua shlashtam kiblu mimoshe. U'yoshua shehu talmido, shel Moshe Rabbeinu masar Torah shebal peh, v'tzivo alehav. V'chein Yoshua kol yama imei chayav limeid al peh. So Yoshua, Moshe was Moser to everybody and to many people. He had three particular Talmidim, and especially Yoshua. And so as long as Yoshua was alive, he was teaching orally that Torah. Uzakenim rabim kiblu mi Yoshua, v'kibel eli min hazakenim umi pimchas. Ushmuel kibel mi eli uveistino, v'david kibel mi shmuel uveistino, v'achia shiloni mi yotze mitzrayim haya v'levi haya, v'shama mi Moshe, v'yakatan bimei Moshe, v'hu kibel mi David uveisino. It's very interesting that he makes this point. And Achia Shilomi lived quite a long life. Maybe another time we could talk about the significance of that for Rambam. But the Rambam continues. Eliyahu kibel mi Achia Shilomi uveisino. Elisha kibel mi Eliyahu uveisino. Yoshua hakoim kibel mi Elisha uveisino. Zachariah kibel mi Yahuyada uveisino. Hoshea kibel mi Zachariah uveisino. Amos kibel mi Hoshea uveisino. Yishayahu kibel mi Amos uveisino. On and on and on, until Ezra uveis dino, kiblu mi Baruch uveis dino. And then the Rambam talks about Ezra. Uveis dino shall Ezra, heina nekrei machik nesagdola. Teiv chaga, Ezraim, Malachi, Daniel, Hanani, Mishal, Azari, Nechemi, Ben Chakalia, Mordechai, Zubavel. Farabi chachamim mimayim, 120 in total. The last was Shimon HaTzadik. He was among the 120. He was kibel mikulam. Voya koin gado achar Ezra. So now we've gone all the way, the Rambam's told us, generation from generation, from Moshe Rabbeinu to the end of the Anshei Knesset Agdola. And at this point we have the period of the Zugos. If you take a look at the order and the beginning of Perkei Avos, this is the order that you see. The Pirkei Avos begins with the Shalshalos HaMesorah, and Shimon HaTzadik is me Shiari Knesses Anshei Knesset Gedolah, and then we have the Zugos. So Antignos Ish Socho Veis Dino Kiblo Mishimon HaTzadik Veis Dino Biosef Ben Yoezer, etc., etc., all the way bringing us to Hillel and Shammai. Now, until the period of the Zugos, we find no unresolved debates, right? As we saw before, this was because of two reasons. Number one, the Rambam says the proficiency of the scholars. And number two, because if there was a question, it could be resolved. So what happened in the period of Zugos? So again, Zugos were what started, we'll call this stage two, what started after the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. So here we have the first recorded unresolved debate. Again, there were debates beforehand, right? The Gemara talks about the debate between David and Shaul about Kiddushin, right? Daita Milver, Daita Pruta. So there were machloksin, but they were resolved. The first unresolved debate relates to Smichan Yantif. And the Mishnah on Chagiga tells you what this machlokas is and what each of the two pairs in the Zugos held. Now, what does Zugos mean? When did it take place? So the period of the Zugos was for about 200 years, from about 170 BCE to 30 of the Common Era. It's important to be aware. Well, first of all, what does a zug mean? Zug is a pair. What is a pair? So one of the pairs was the Nasi, and the other one was the Av Beis Din. And who were they? So the first one was Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. They lived approximately during the time of the Maccabean Wars. Then we have Yoshua ben Prachya, Nitai Harbeli. They lived during the time of John Hyrcanus. Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach, they lived during the time of Alexander Yanai. Shmai and Aftalion, they lived during the time of Hyrcanus II. And finally, Hillel and Shammai, and they lived during the time of Herod the Great. So why wasn't this debate about Smicha resolved, right? Why is it that until this point, for well over 1,000 years, every machlokas was resolved? And now, all of a sudden, we have this unresolved debate. So the Rambam doesn't answer this question. And it's actually very mysterious. And we don't really know. There are different theories. One theory is that there's a work called Yesod HaMishnah V'Arichasa. It's written by Rav Reuven Margolios. It's published by Mossad Rav Kook. You can get it on Hebrew Books if you want. It's a short book, and he has a whole theory about that the Mufla should be based in, even though he could be outvoted, but he has the right to hold up a vote. He has certain makoros that indicate that way, and for some reason the Mufla should be based in held up the vote, and that's why they didn't resolve it. Yeah, that's an interesting theory as to why it wasn't resolved. Either way, whatever the reason is, it's clear that this was a crack. This was a crack in the transmission of the Masorah, the transmission of Torah. The Gemara in Tmura, Tesvav Amud Aleph, says that. And it was a crack that would ultimately grow and come to dominate the nature of Talmud Torah, namely Machlokas. And it continued. By the time Hillel and Shammai came around, there were three additional unresolved debates. Again, why weren't they resolved? We don't know. One possibility relates to the historical context. Whether this is the direct cause or not, certainly important to be aware of what was going on at this time. So during the period of the Zugos, it would seem that the level of Torah scholarship was quite poor. It was a time of spiritual turmoil and persecution. Like we said, Hillel and Shammai lived during the Herodian regime in which Herod was a terrible person, maybe a great builder, but crazy. He killed Chachamim. He persecuted Chachamim. In fact, the Gemara in Sukkah describes how Torah was basically forgotten. Now, it doesn't mean totally forgotten, but the Gemara says that Torah was forgotten until Hillel came up from Bavel and reestablished it, just like Ezra had reestablished Torah when he came up from Bavel. Hillel's expertise became known 1 year on Erev Pesach, which fell out on Shabbos, and people didn't know what to do. How do you shech the Pesach, the Karban Pesach, when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos? Now, this is it doesn't happen every year, but it's not like the most obscure question in the world, right? How do you shech the Karban Pesach? And nobody was sure what to do. And Hillel came and he told them what to do. The B'nai B'Seira, who were the leaders at the time, didn't know the answer. And when Hillel did, the Gemara says in a demonstration of tremendous humility, the B'nai B'Seira abdicated and they appointed Hillel as the Nasi. That's the Gemara. It's in Psachim on Samech Vav on the base. So it's clear from these Makoros that this was a time of spiritual turmoil and of religious persecution and weak knowledge of Torah by most people. And again, the whole period of Zugos was like this. The period of Zugos began, we know, is during the Hanukkah story. There was the conflict between the Hellenists and the Chashmonaim. Later, during the period of Zugos, we have the conflicts between the Prushim and the Tzedukim. The last years of Yosi ben Yoezer's life coincided with the rulership of Antiochus. So this was, and we know what Antiochus tried to do to Torah. In fact, Yosi ben Yoezer was executed by the Greeks. By the Greeks, by Antiochus. So it might be that these four debates weren't resolved because of the religious turmoil during this era. Another possibility to consider that the Rambam might actually be alluding to when he talks about the bittul of the Sanhedrin is that even though there was a high court, it didn't fully function, at least not in its full capacity. The Rambam talks about leaving the Lishkas Hagazas around the year 30, but there were other bitulim. According to Josephus, in the year 57 BCE, so here we're talking about a little less than 100 years, a little more, sorry, than 100 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Gabinius, who was the Roman proconsul, divided the country into five different provinces and said that there was a based in of equal authority in each of them, which effectively removed the authority of the Sanhedrin. And then there was this fellow named Antipater was known as Adumian, meaning he was from Edom. He was the founder of the Herodian dynasty. He was the father of Herod the Great. His Judaism was questioned. There was a forced conversion by the Tzedukim. So questionable conversions are not a new thing. And anyway, he advised Gabinius other ways to remove the power of the Sanhedrin. He transferred the power to Hyrcanus II and made him the Kohen Gadol. And if you look at the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, the Mishnah in Sota, in the ninth parak, it talks about when Sanhedrin was abolished. So it says that they stopped singing songs in the banquet hall. Some of the Mepharshim say it's referring to this event. In other words, more than 100 years before the Beis HaMikdash during the time of Antipater. So there was a weakening of the Sanhedrin, and this too may have contributed to an end of the uniformity. So while the Sanhedrin after this was eventually restored, it lacked the same authority, lacked independence to some degree. There was always a fear of Roman intervention. And it may very well be that these historical factors also were a factor in the lack of resolution of machlokas. But still, at this point, again, the period of the Zugos, it didn't proliferate. There were one, two, three, four unresolved debates, not a proliferation. So this brings us to the third stage, which is when debate proliferated following Shammai v'Hillel, the Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel. And what happened was basically, already from the time of Shammai v'Hillel, there were two parallel yeshivos. There was Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Beis is a house, Beis HaMedrash. There were two yeshivas. And this is very interesting. We don't have any other examples of this. So why didn't actually these great yeshivas merge? There's a historical work / sefer written by Rav Yekutiel Friedner. It's called Divrei Yemei HaBayis HaSheni. It's a big Talmud Chacham. He speculates that maybe they didn't merge because either respect for Shammai, in other words, even though Hillel was the leader, Hillel's yeshiva was the leader, he didn't want to merge and Shammai's yeshiva. Shammai, first of all, was a great Talmud Chacham, and he valiantly stood up to Herod when Herod was being tried for mass murder, and he tried to use his authority, his power to bully his way out of the situation. Another theory he has is that a single unified yeshiva might have made the Romans suspicious. The Romans were always worried about the Jews rebelling, especially Herod, who was neurotic. And he might have thought that a single yeshiva was a challenge to his authority. But basically, for whatever the reason was, and there might have been many reasons, there was not a single yeshiva, but rather two yeshivos. And because of that, so then, naturally, there were many different machloksim. Each yeshiva had their mahalich in so many different questions, such that the Gemara says, by the time Shammai and Hillel had died, it was, and debate continued to proliferate, it was mamish as though there were two toros. So what was one supposed to do at this point, right? This is the first time in Jewish history now that we basically have, you had a shaila, and you don't know what to do. And on 1,000 shailas, you have Beis Shammai's opinion, you have Beis Hillel's opinion. So what's a person supposed to do? How are you supposed to know practically what to do? So the Gemara tells us that basically you could choose. And it's important to understand this because in a certain sense, we live in a similar type of matziv even today. So the Gemara Erevin, Vavam and Beis, going on to Zayin Amud Aleph, says, V'hatanya li'olam halacha k'beis hillel, v'arot alasos k'divrei Beis Shammai osa, k'divrei Beis Hillel osa. The Gemara says, I don't know what you're talking about. If halacha is like Beis Hillel, then what do you mean? You could choose. So the Gemara basically answers, Hagufa kasha, amit li'olam halacha k'beis hillel, lo kasha, kan kod nebasko, kan lacha nebasko. Gives another answer. But basically what the Gemara is answering is that before it was decided that halacha follows Beis Hillel, so harotze lasos k'divrei Beis Hillel osa, and harotze lasos k'divrei Beis Shammai osa. If you do kule Beis Shammai and kule Beis Hillel, you're a rasha. If you do chumre Beis Shammai and chumre Beis Hillel, you're a ksil b'choshech holech. Rather, what should a person do? Ike Beis Shammai k'kulein u'k'chumrehen, or Ike Beis Hillel k'kulein u'k'chumrehen. And how do you decide? You could decide. Do you want to go to Beis Shammai's yeshiva? Do you want to go to Beis Hillel's yeshiva? Do you want to be a Talmud of Beis Shammai or a Talmud of Beis Hillel? That's basically what happened. That was what a person would need to do. So you could choose. You could choose. Now, we should note that even though there were many debates between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, it was a period the Gemara describes their relationship with each other, based off of the pasuk in Zechariah, of ha'emes v'hashalom ehavu, meaning to say, they loved emes, so they weren't going to change their position. They held strong to what they thought was correct, but they also loved shalom, And therefore, even though they were convinced of the correctness of their opinion, they had mutual respect for each other and peace for each other. And the Gemara in Yevamos talks about practically how they handled certain situations, like questions of yichus and the like, such that they were able to live as a single religion, even though they had all these debates. But Bekitzer, there was a time of great machlokes, and you could choose what to do, but it was still, there was emes and there was shalom. So that went on for quite a while. When did it finally change? So this brings us to stage four, Yavne. So with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in around the year 70, the Jewish people were under the leadership. When I say the Jewish people, I should note that there was tremendous infighting among the Jewish people. There was tremendous sectarianism. If you read the tragic Gemaras in the Agadita, in Perek HaNisakin, in Gittin, you'll see this. So I mean primarily the rabbinic Judaism, which is what we would triumph eventually, and what we are a continuation of that Mesorah going all the way back to Moshe B'Sinai. So the Jewish people were led by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai famously, like the Gemara in Gittin tells us, moved the center of Torah learning to Yavne. It was already a yeshiva. He tells the Caesar, Tein li Yavne v'chachameha, and though the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the center of Judaism now becomes the Beis HaMedrash in Yavne, Kerem B'Yavne. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, interestingly enough, though, he surely could have become the leader. He allows Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken, or Rabbi Gamliel II, to become the Nasi. Rabbi Gamliel was a descendant of Hillel, and also therefore a descendant of David HaMelech, and he reestablishes the Sanhedrin in Yavne. And Rabbi Gamliel realizes that there's a need to finally arrive at some type of resolution for the debates between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, so that there would once again be one Torah. We couldn't go on like this with these two different schools. So the Tosefta and Edyos writes, "Kshenichnesu chachamim lekerem b'Yavne amru, asida shah she'adam mevakesh davar medivrei Torah ve'eno motza, medivrei sofim ve'eno motza." What's psukim? Amru, so therefore, what do we need to do? We have to come to a resolution. Amru naschil mihilo v'shamay. Let's start off with Hillel and Shammai. In other words, there are debates. The olam hadlacha kedivrei merubim, lo huzkeru, and then, fine. We don't have to go back. It talks all about over there. The discussion at the beginning of Edyos about mentioning the minority view. So basically, what Rabbi Gamliel, this Tosefta says, is that he was concerned about basically two problems, right? Number one, asida sha'achas, Torah, motza. So he's not going to be able to find the words of Torah. And also it says, So we have to go ahead and start with Shammai and Hillel. And why Shammai and Hillel? Because that was the most machloksin was between Shammai and Hillel. So the Gemara says that for 3 years they debated these topics of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And they finally came to a conclusion that the halacha is like Beis Hillel. So the Gemara in Erevin says, Am Rabbi Abba, Am Rabbi Shmuel, Shaloshanim nechlechu Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Halalu Omrim halacha kemoseinu, Halalu Omrim halacha kemoseinu, Yatza basko ve'amro, Elu ve'elu divelkim chayim, V'halacha kedivrei Beis Hillel. So there are a number of issues here. We don't have time to talk about them. First of all, why are we following a basko? Loba Shamayim, the famous Gemara, which maybe we'll talk about in a moment, of Tanu Shalachnai, doesn't matter what miracles there are, what baskols there are, lo bashamayim hi. So there's a machlokas rishonim, more or less, how to understand this. was it really the bas kol that was machriya or not? And generally, there's a debate in the Rishonim exactly what the scope of lo bashamayim he is. There's a very interesting tshuva sefer by one of the Rishonim, known as Shel Tshuvos Min HaShamayim, which is from the 12th century. The author's name was Rav Yaakov Marves from France. And anyway, he used to have an angel that would appear to him in a dream and give him halachic guidance. So if you look at the Hakdama to that sefer, it's also published by Moshe Rav Kook. It's written by Rav Ruven Margolios. So he has a very comprehensive essay on this question as to what is the rules, under what conditions can you follow bas kol, can't you follow bas kol, and the like. On a more basic level, if you look at Tosis on this Gemara, he actually has two deos as to an Erevin on Daf Vav on the base, Dibur Maskol Kan Lachar Bas Kol. So there, Tosfos, it's a little earlier, but anyway, he has two deos about this question of the role of the Bas Kol. But the mainstream view on this Shaila, which is embraced by the majority of the Rishonim and accepted, is the Rambam. The Rambam writes in a number of places, among them, Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, Perek Tes, Halacha Dalet, that there is really no possibility of heavenly intervention and interference in the decision of Halacha following Moshe Rabbeinu. We always follow the majority. What was the point of the Bas Kol? Maybe it was, like Tosa suggests, to make people more confident in the majority vote. After all, you could imagine that this was quite a upheaval, right? For more than a century, or I don't know more than a century, but for many years, close to a century, the yeshivos, the Talmidim of Beis Shammai were doing one thing, and the Talmidim of Beis Hillel were doing another thing. And now all of a sudden, Rambam Gamliel says, okay, we took a vote, and the halacha is like Beis Hillel. Yeah, Divrei Elokim Chayim, you guys are also right. Whatever that means exactly, we can talk about another time, but halacha is like Beis Hillel. So that was obviously something that would have been very hard to swallow. So the Bas Kol came, and the Bas Kol gave it a little more credence, confidence, but fundamentally, the Psak is rooted in Rov. So now we have, finally, after quite a while, a resolution to this debate. Also, the Rambam, I said, expresses this idea perhaps a little more, Berachav, if you want to read it, in the Hakdama to the Mishnah, where he talks about this idea of lo bashamayim. Okay, so that was Yavne. So what happens next? So first of all, as we noted, and this is stage five, so as we noted, the Sanhedrin did continue to function after Yavne. It went to different places like Usha and Sipori, and finally ended up in Tveria, as the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says. And over the years, many new debates arose, and maybe some of them were decided in a definitive manner, but others were not. In fact, Rashi writes that the ambiguity that arose in the generation following Hillel and Shammai wasn't even fully resolved until the time of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who lived in a time of relative tranquility. That's Rashi and Bav Metzia and Lamed Gimel on the base, Tiba Maschil, Bi Mei Rebbe Nishnes Mishnazu. So as we know from learning Gemara, there are many, many new machloksin of Tanayim that arose after Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, many machloksin and Amorayim, and many of them were not decided in this sort of definitive manner that took place between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. I was hoping to talk to you a little bit about this, the story of Tanur Shel Achnayim and what that means. Maybe we'll talk about that next week. So one way or the other, so now there were many new machloks and many new amorayim, machloks amorayim. And the question is, why didn't they resolve these questions either? Again, there are many places, for example, where the Gemara does say halacha like so-and-so. And these decisions, these conclusions might have been based off of the majority, right? Generally speaking, Yachad v'Rabim, Halacha k'Rabim, whether or not there was the same type of face-to-face formal debate or not. We'll see shortly that many Rishonim assume that even when there's a majority position, the principle of Yachad v'Rabim, Halacha k'Rabim, that we follow the majority, is not the same as Achrei Rabim Lahatos, the din d'oraisa, that you follow the majority. That din d'oraisa, follow the majority, is only stated when there's a formal amida l'minyan. In other words, there's a debate, everybody's there, and there's an amida l'minyan. So we have many times where there's a clear conclusion in the halacha, sometimes in the Mishnah, sometimes in the Gemara. But there are many cases where there isn't. Sometimes the halacha isn't clear at all. Sometimes even when we do say what the halacha is, but the, like I said before, the definitiveness is not the same as, let's say, a ruling of the Sanhedrin. For example, we assume that b'shas hadchak, you could be somech on a das yachid. And that's, we wouldn't say that if there was an amida l'minyan. Because in that case, if there's an amida l'minyan, then a das yachid is rejected. The Gemara says, k'day hu Rabbi Shimon lismoch alav b'shas adchak, for example. So the way that, again, many Rishonim and Achronim understand that is because this isn't Achrei Rabim Lahatos, this is Yachad v'Rabim Halacha k'Rabim. There was no formal amida l'minyan. So one way or the other, as we said, so there's the Sanhedrin continues to function for a while after Yavne, but no resolutions definitively are reached on many of the machloksim. So why not? Why not? So again, here too, we have the same question. Was it a fundamental issue? Was it a practical issue? It would seem that it was a practical issue. But still, they did it for Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, so why didn't they do it for everything else? So I think you could suggest a number of possible reasons. And it could be that a number of them are true. Maybe there are other answers. Maybe these are wrong. I don't know. One possibility is that the reason why they dafka focused on resolving Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as opposed to other machloksin, or they didn't continue the Tosefta we saw before said, they said, Naschil, Mishamai Behillel. So they started with that, but they also, so as we know, more or less ended with that, right? Why didn't they continue this project that Raman Gamliel started? And the reason is because when it came to Beishamai and Behillel, it was particularly pressing. Like the Gemara said, it was Nasa Kishtei Toros. There were two Toros. Once their debates were resolved, the need to convene all the Chachamim in one place for the purpose of resolution really dissipated. The Ran even writes in Drashos that when there's more machloksin, the need for resolution is greater. When there's fewer, not as much. It might have been. That's reason one. Reason two, maybe persecution limited their ability to gather, as we said. The Romans during this period of time sought to ban the teaching of Torah and smicha and even circumcision. This was the period of time of the Hasara Ruge Malchus. So it could be that it was for reasons of persecution that they didn't gather together to resolve other debates. Number three, the Chazal tell us that the greatest scholars didn't want to remain in one place, rather spread out to ensure the dissemination of Torah, the Gemara and Sanhedrin. Lamed Beis, Amud Beis says, follow Rabbi Eliezer to Lud, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Bror, Chayil, and to Rabbi Yeshua to Pekin, and to Rabbi Amliel to Yavne, and to Rabbi Kiva to Bnei Brak, and Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion to Sichin, and Rabbi Yossi to Tzipori. In other words, in a sense, sort of like nowadays, there were many great yeshivos in many great cities. If all of the Torah was centered in one place, which would have been necessary to resolve these debates, then Torah would not have been disseminated. People would not, there would be cities without yeshivos, without Torah. And finally, and I think, in a sense, maybe this is the most important, reason, though hardest to understand. But it might be that even though there's an obvious value of uniformity, there might also be an advantage to multiplicity in machlokas. When these great chachamim, like we just read about, went throughout the land to disseminate Torah, they developed their own methodologies. Each one of them revealed their own perspective in Torah's Moshe. And we believe, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, and because Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, that means that there is value in debate, because each position is a true perspective of Torah's Moshe. Now, what that means, again, maybe we should have another shiur on that. Maybe next week we'll talk about Elu ve'elu a little bit more. But each individual perceives their own limited perspective in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinite Torah. And when different chachamim each develop their own understanding, then more of that ultimate truth of Torah is revealed. And all of the perspectives stem from Hashem's ultimate oneness. It's only because of our limitation that we only see a small piece of that. And therefore, when you study a multiplicity of viewpoints, so you'll get a better understanding of Torah. And because each of these chachamim developed their own mahalchim in their own yeshivos and in their own talmidim, so the riboy Torah is something that, though difficult, and it certainly has disadvantages, you don't know what to do, but it's part of Yasher Koach Sheshibarta. And that is something that is also an advantage. And that might also be one reason why they didn't get together in a particular place to resolve every single debate. And so, one way or the other, there was a lot of machlokas that continued. And this continued throughout the period of the Tanaim and the Amoraim and the like. So this brings us to stage 6, which is our current stage, post Chasimas HaShas. So what happens now? And what changed with Chasimas HaShas? Why did everything change? Why is it that we, for example, could argue with each other in Achronim and Rishonim, and even Achronim could sometimes argue with Rishonim, but nobody, Rishonim argue with Gaonim, but nobody argues with Shas, right? Nobody argues with Shas. Nobody says, you know, I'm going to go ahead and write a tshuva and I'm going to definitively show you that even though Shas says this is Aser, I'll show you that it's Mutter, right? So why not? What changed? So the Rambam tells us, there are more than one answer to this question, but the main answer to this question is the Rambam. And we'll read it now in one moment in the Hakdama to Mishneh Torah. The reason that the Talmud Bavli is binding is because it was universally accepted by all of Klal Yisrael. That's what the Rambam writes. The Ran says it a little weaker. He says by Rov of Klal Yisrael. Either way, it was accepted by Klal Yisrael. And what this means, the Rambam implies, and this idea is developed by Rav Elchanan and the Rav and others, is that when you have rulings, and in this case it's a corpus of rulings, that are universally accepted by Klal Yisrael, it has the same status as a ruling of the Sanhedrin HaGadol Shel Yerushalayim, it becomes universally binding upon all of Klal Yisrael. In fact, what's indicated here is that the authority of the Sanhedrin comes from the people. So therefore, if the people accept a ruling or a group of rulings, then it has the same status as a ruling of the Sanhedrin HaGadol. And that's why you have to accept Shas. And the Rambam tells us, and maybe we'll read it right now a little bit inside, that's why you can't argue with Shas. And that's also why, there might be machloks in, you know, what Shas said, but nobody argues with Shas. And that's also why, that's never happened since then, the Rambam writes. There's never been a document or a set of documents or rulings that have been universally accepted upon by all of Klal Yisrael since Chasimas HaShas. So therefore, since Chasimas HaShas, authority is basically local. You have to follow your local Beis Din. But no local Beis Din can impose their views on another locality. Let's just take a quick look over here. Nimtza Ravina Ravashi b'chavreim sov gdoli chachmei Yisrael hamatikim tar shabal peh v'shegaz u'gzeres v'eskinu takanas v'nhigu minhagos u'pashtu gzeirosam v'takanasam u'minhagasam b'chol Yisrael b'chol mokomos moshvoseihem. So their rulings and their gzeros and their understandings were accepted, and they spread throughout all of Klal Yisrael wherever they are. Ulaachar Beis Dino shall Ravashi shechibra Talmud b'yemei bino ugmaro nispazu Yisrael baratzos pizur yaser. The Jewish people began to be dispersed. V'igil k'tzavos uli'im rechokim. There were Jews always, even during the Talmud Bavli, in far-flung places. But there was at least a center of Torah. And now that began to dissipate. And they ended up all over the world. And there was no way to gather together and learn together anymore, as all of Klal Yisrael had done. Kansu Yisrael Olmod Bishivosein Alafim Urvavos Kimosha Ayomi Kadem Alamiskabsin Yechidim Hasridim Asher Hashem Kore Bechol Yer V'Yer V'Chol Medina Medina. So what happened? Things became local. There was a yeshiva in this city, yeshiva in that country, and Vauskin Batayra Umevinin Bechibure Chacham and Kulam V'Yodim Meihem Derech HaMishpat Heachu. Now, the Rambam is sort of noting that even though Bavel did remain quite dominant even after Shas, and there were the period of the Savurayim and then the Gaonim, but it wasn't the same. Bavel was an important Torah community, maybe the most important Torah community, but you couldn't say that it reflected all of Klal Yisrael. It was one locale among many locales. V'chol Beis Din she'amad achar atalmud b'chol medina medina b'gazar ohiskin ohinit livnei medinaso o livnei medinos lo pashtu ma'isa b'chol Yisrael. So the rulings remained local. Mepnei richuk moshvoseim v'shibush adrachim v'yos Beis Din she'la'os ha'medina yechidim u'Beis Din ha'gadol she'el shivim batel mikama shanim kodim chibur ha'tamud. Lefikach ein kol finanche medina zu l'no b'minag medina acheres. You can't force anyone to follow different halachos. V'ein omrim l'Beis Din Let's say one of the Gaonim understood that the halacha is so and so. And a later Beis Din thought that the Gaonim got it wrong, or that particular Gaon got it wrong. You can't follow the Rishon. You have to do the thing that you think is right. Doesn't matter who was earlier. You follow, you interpret the Torah to the best of your ability, and that's the ruling that you follow. It doesn't matter that you might be going against people who preceded you. So the Rambam here, we should note, is saying two things. He's talking both about the question of the interpretation of the law as well as legislation. The Rambam continues along these lines, and I know we're out of time. So he talks about the Gaonim, and he then leads him to explain why he's writing the Mishnah Torah, which is because the state of Torah knowledge is very weak. People don't know what to do. They don't know how to come to the bottom line, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you do? So what did the Rambam say, basically? You know, when the Gemara tells you what the halacha is, so then it's very straightforward. But when it's not clear, so each person has to, each posek, has to figure it out on their own. And the pashup shot is that if there's two chachamim that have different rulings, they don't have to change their view. In a sense, it's similar to what we said before about during the times of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. What do? If you want to be from the Talmud and Beis Shammai, you can. And if you want to be from the Talmud and Beis Hillel, you can. So what does that mean practically? How do I figure out what to do? So the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Aseh Lecha Rav, says it twice. One of them is the Rambam, says it's referring to a posek. So you have to pick a posek. But how does the posuk know what to do? So if they're worthy of coming to their own conclusions, if they're higia lahora, so then they have to follow the view that's most compelling, that they think is correct. Well, what about if they're two views? They don't know how to be machriya. They're two options. They both seem to make a lot of sense. How do I pick? So the Gemara more or less lays out basic guidelines of what to do, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The conclusion of the Gemara, though, unfortunately, is a machlokas as well. According to the Rashba, basically, what you do is you follow the Gadol B'chachm of the Minyan. And if they're equal, so then we say Midoraisa, we're Machmir, Midorabbanan, we're Mekel. According to the Rambam, then we always say Adoraisa L'chom, Midorabbanan, L'kula. So now what happened to following the majority rule? So there's two things. Number one, like we said before, that is only true when there's an Amida L'Minyan. But many poskim say that when there's no Amida L'Minyan, so then even the minority view, if they can defend their position, they can continue to maintain their position and their Talmidim could follow their position. Other poskim think no, you should always follow the majority view if you could show there's a majority view. And when you look at the contemporary poskim, you'll see that even today, different poskim take different approaches on this question. Some poskim are more nota to follow their view, the view that they think is correct, even if they acknowledge they're in the minority. Others will say no, we should follow the majority view and the like. And that's where we are today. The final stage, Bezras Hashem, we look forward to the next stage. We hope it comes soon, in which we will once again become unified in our observance and our understanding of Torah, B'mehera V'yameinu, Amen.